It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! How we doing? There are certain games, because there's 162 baseball games, but there are certain games that at the end of the season, you won't forget. Sometimes they're incredible wins, sometimes they're painful losses, and sometimes they are games that are just completely drunk. And the New York Mets, Washington Nationals, May 18th, game one of a four-game series was one of those games that, I mean, it had everything. this game was stupid by the end. We had dumb umpires that don't know the rules. We have blown leads. We have weird managerial decisions. We've got weird bunt attempts. I mean, this baseball game between the Mets and the Nationals had absolutely everything. And this night in sports has had absolutely everything. Because besides the Yankees and David Bednar holding on to win their game, I've been glued to this Thunder-Spurs game. And I admit, I am doing this Rico live while simultaneously watching the conclusion of Oklahoma City-San Antonio. So if I'm distracted, I apologize. Let's get to this game. Number one, thank God they won. Because there was a part of me, as the Mets went down 3-1, and as they took the lead and then blew the game in the eighth inning, and we sweated out all those Nationals rallies with chances to win in the ninth, 10th, and 11th inning, it felt like the goodwill of the 5-1 road trip and the good feeling of the great comeback on Sunday, in a weird way, gets wiped away if you lose this game, especially a frustrating game, especially a game that would have given you all the hallmarks of the Mets struggles. Like, to go back to seven games under 500 as we're trying to get out of the abyss, I don't know. I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but it would have been like going backwards. It would have felt like, what did that homestand mean? So this game, as it continued and as it got crazier and crazier and crazier, this was one of those games that I wanted more and more. This would have been a bad loss. This would have been a frustrating loss on a lot of levels. And somehow this team, who's starting to slowly, and it is a slow process, slowly try to win us back in believing in them, was somehow able to pull this game off. Where do we start? Can I start with the umpires? Is that asking too much? If you are Todd Tishner and Chris Siegel and John Bacon and Clint Vondrak, whatever the hell these guys' names are, don't you have to understand the rules of baseball? And I know that some of these rules are new. The extra inning rules are weird. The position player's pitching rule is weird. But how do we have a delay in the 12th inning of this game when the Nationals decide to punt it? They basically decide, all right, no mas, we've lost, let's back the truck up. How do you not know that they're able to use a position player? The fact that we sat there for 8 minutes, because I think it was 8 minutes, and we got to watch the confusion on their faces and the disgust from Keith Hernandez. I love when Keith gets disgusted. I'll tell you, that very much entertains me. How do you not know this? I thought the rule was pretty straightforward. Gary Cohn explained it too, which is, yeah, it has to be a blowout to use a position player in the regular nine innings of a game. But once you get to extra innings, you've got that choice if you want to tap the hell out. So that was one thing that drove me nuts. But the other thing that I loved that was just crazy was the fact that Vidal Brujan is laying down a goddamn bunt with the bases loaded. A buddy of mine texted me and said, I don't know if that was smart or not. You don't know if that was smart or not? It was asinine. Again, Keith Hernandez basically said that, and Gary Cohen's retort was, well, that's what Vidal Brujan does. He bunts for base hits. Oh, okay. When there's a force at home and there's a force at any base, is it really the wisest idea? And you go back and you look at that bunt by Vidal Brujan, and this is how baseball is such a game of inches. So at this point, the Mets took the lead on the infield hit by Carson Bench, the one that went off the pitcher's glove, Paxton Schultz, by an inch. I mean, really, he fields that ball. He at least has a play at the plate to nail Tyrone Taylor. But after the Bo Bichette base hit and the Juan Soto intentional walk, Vidal Brujan does that bunt attempt. So it's a close game. It's a one-run game. If that ball is caught and it came pretty close to Schultz being able to catch that, it's an easy double play. Carson Benj is racing home. He ain't messing around. So the Mets got a lot of breaks in this game, a lot of by an inch. And again, I don't feel bad about that because it feels like at times the inches have gone against this team. Line drives right at people, diving catches. So I'll never complain when the inches go our way. But think about just those sequences, right? The game-winning hit by Carson Benj is a comebacker off the glove of the pitcher Paxton Schultz, who should have fielded it cleanly, didn't, but like he's an inch off from fielding it cleanly. That turns into the lead run. Vidal Brujan hits bunts a ball that's in the air. It's not even a good bunt. And Schultz comes pretty close to catching it. Even the Bo Bichette base hit, it's a ground ball up the middle. It's a few inches to the left. It's an out. But maybe it's a sign of things starting to turn for this team, that the breaks are now starting to go our way. But you go back to that 12th inning where this team needed to score a run. I completely agreed with bunting with Hayden Sanger. I thought that was a no-brainer because I think when Hayden Sanger is in the game, I'm going to treat him like the pitcher spot. So even in a tie game on the road, move that runner. And also, you've got your top of the order coming up. So the worst case scenario is you get a run and you take the lead, even if there's a good chance you'll give it right back a half inning later. But then you also give Benj, Bichette, and potentially Soto a chance to get at bats in that inning with a chance to drive in more than just that run that's on third base and less than two outs. So I have no problem with the bunt by Hayden Sanger. Carson Benj continues to be a fire plug or a fire spark, whatever the hell it is. I don't know. I just watched 4 hours of baseball and a classic Western Conference Finals game. I don't, words don't make sense right now. Nothing from that game makes sense right now. But Benj continues to be a fire plug. And this was a good game for Bo Bichette. This was a positive day for Bo Bichette. And it didn't start off that way because when he walked in the third inning and instantly gets picked off, I think all of us are throwing our coffee or throwing our beer or throwing our water. But he gets the sacrifice fly in the fifth inning, which was valuable because it advanced the runners. So that was at least a quality at-bat by Bo. He obviously hits the home run in the seventh inning, which felt important, an insurance run. Something that I think we felt all night long. The Mets were going to need every inch of it. By the way, this Spur-Thunder game is just... Man, this is going to be a seven-gamer. Well, maybe not, but it's going to be entertaining for however many games we see. Anyhow, he gets the other sacrifice fly in the 10th inning, which was also important because at the bare minimum, when you come up with the runner on second, you got to move that runner. I'd love for you to drive him in. You're making $42 million, but at the bare minimum, you have to move that runner. And Bo Bichette did that in the 10th inning. And then he gets the base hit in the 12th inning, which was a very important hit in that inning right after they took the lead. And then sure, why not the two-run double off of Yorbert Vivas? It all counts the same, even if we know it was a lob. It's something maybe even I could have made contact on. But this was a step in the right direction for Bo Bichette on a lot of levels. Juan Soto had a big hit, the two-run single in the fifth inning. You know, Mark Vientos had a terrible day. He's the one who bounced into the double play in the 10th inning. But that's really what Vientos this season has been. It's been a lot of start and stop. The good news for Mark is that even off of a game like this, in which he goes 0-for-5 and bounces into a double play in the 10th inning, he knows he's in the lineup the next day. But Brett Beatty hit that monster home run and then came up with the big two-run single in the 12th inning. Marcus Semien had the sacrifice fly that gave them the lead. Tyrone Taylor had two more hits in this game. Luis Torrens had an RBI double. So contributions all the way around. But how about the escape act by Waskar Brazoban? And that really is where we all thought this game was dead. You know, after Tobias Myers gives up the game-tying hit in the eighth inning, the RBI double by Curtis Meade, you know, as this game moves into the 9th and the 10th and the 11th, we know we have to sit through those moments where the game can end on one pitch. And a credit to everybody, Luke Weaver, Waskar Brazoban, forget Craig Kimbrell because he came into the game, it was mop-up duty. Both Weaver and Brazoban needed to make enormous pitches. And we'll start with Luke Weaver in the 9th inning. Gives up the leadoff hit, first pitch single to C.J. Abrams. And we saw some unfortunate hit batsmans in this game. We'll get to Christian Scott in a little bit and what turned his start. But after Weaver gets that big strikeout, he's ahead of Joey Weimer. The count's even to Joey Weimer, and he drills him. And that puts the winning run on second base and forces Weaver now to get two outs without giving up a hit and without letting this game slip away in the bottom of the 9th inning. And like I said at the top, it would have been a bad loss. He strikes out Jose Tena. He gets Yorbit Vivas to pop up right. I think as Gary Cohen gave that stat, that Yorbit Vivas is like 0 for 19 with runners in scoring position, which I thought was going to be like the ultimate jinx if Vivas walked us off at that point. But Luke Weaver follows up that performance he had on Saturday against the Yankees. He follows up his Rico, I'm the man right now, star of the series, with a gutsy performance. He wasn't great, but he was able to make the big pitch when he needed to. And then you've got Waskar Brazoban in the 10th inning of this game. Slam it home, Jalen. There you go. Sorry, I'm rooting for the Thunder. What do you want from me? But you got Waskar Brazoban in the 10th inning. And the 10th inning felt like torture. That's where you really thought they were going to lose this game. Because the Mets didn't score in the top of the 10th inning. And it feels like when you don't score in the top of the 10th inning of an extra inning game, you may as well put the game on ice. Like, you're done. It creates such an easy opportunity for the home team. And look, that 10th inning was, didn't I briefly describe, Bichette have the sack fly. They walked Juan Soto. Vientos bounced into a double play. I actually was envisioning that top of the 10th inning even before it happened. Because with a runner on second and nobody out, and Bichette being someone who actually is really good at going the other way, that's all he does. In my mind, I'm thinking, all right, if you're not going to come through, Bo, with a big base hit, at least advance the runner. But the problem is, if Bichette advances the runner or doesn't, Soto's not getting a chance to hit. Like, the only way Juan Soto is ever going to get a chance to hit in that spot is if Bo Bichette drew a walk. Because, like, even a base hit where the runner doesn't score, you probably still walk Soto. You probably still at that point say, we're not going to let Soto beat us. So you could envision that inning playing out exactly the way it did. Bichette makes out, you walk Soto, Vientos double play. I was hoping in that inning that since Juan Soto has now become aggressive on the base paths, we saw it in the series against the Yankees, that would have been a good opportunity for Soto to steal second base. And Cohen, Gary Cohen, brought it up to Keith Hernandez, who said, nah, I wouldn't do that. I'm thinking, why would you not do it? Vientos is a prime double play candidate, prime as hell. So if you can steal second, if you're Juan Soto, why not eliminate the possibility of a Mark Vientos double play? But anyhow, they don't score in the 10th inning. And how about the work of Waskar Brazoban? Gives up the bunt sacrifice immediately, which predictable because it's a tie game in the bottom of the 10th inning. Intentionally walked James Wood, predictable. So the whole thing is to form. You're looking at first and third, one out, with Curtis Meade at the plate. And at that point, I was kind of willing to do what Mendy did, which is, hey, let's try to turn two. Let's try. Sorry. Are you watching this basketball game, Hoff? I mean, my God. Victor Wembanyama with a game tying three with 26 seconds to go in the first overtime.
Yeah, like, today's just a crazy sports day, dude. Like, they don't want games to end.
I know. The Yankee game was entertaining. Obviously, this Met game was wild. And the Western Conference Finals, which is coming with such incredible hype, as you can imagine, it deserves. It's lived up to it in game one. But anyhow, I'll talk about that on Evan and Tiki. Back to Waskar Brazoban. He falls behind Meade and walks him. And it sets up this bases loaded, you can't screw up, you need either a pop-up, a strikeout, or a ground ball right at somebody. And even if it's right at somebody, you just never know. I mean, you get a ground ball right at Mark Vientos, there's a chance he pulls a Lucas Duda. So Nunez comes up. I'm already preparing for, all right, they're going to lose this game. And I think at that point, I had already said to Hoff, maybe we should do a Rico. Because the way we do this is, obviously, when a series is over, we always do a Rico. And then sometimes we'll do pop-ups based on the game, based on the craziness of a game, based on if it deserves an instant reaction. This game, obviously, it became known throughout. Okay, maybe this is crazy enough to talk about as soon as it's done. But Nunez comes up, and I'm expecting, I wasn't sure what to envision on how the game was going to end, but I thought the game was over. Don't we all? And he hits the ball right at Mark Vientos, and credit to Vientos, because even though the ball's right at him and it's a routine play, Mark Vientos is still someone you are not comfortable with completely. And he made a perfect throw home, got the lead runner, and now Brazoban is a batter away from getting through it, but he's got to face C.J. Abrams, the same guy who had the sacrifice fly in the seventh inning, the same guy who led off the ninth inning with a base hit, and the same guy who's killed us at times this season. So now I'm envisioning Abrams ripping one into the right field corner, and that's how they lose. That's now how I'm envisioning how they win this or how they lose this game. And even when Brazoban gets ahead of him 1-2, aren't we all thinking the same thing? All right, here we go. This is where they lose the game after being ahead of the count. This is where they give up the big hit after being ahead of the count, which we've seen so often. We saw it in Anaheim with the extra inning game they lost on that Saturday night. And Brazoban threw a great changeup on 1-2, and he struck him out. Brazoban has been great this season. And for all the crap we've given David Stearns, rightfully so, the trade of Waskar Brazoban 2 years ago, even if it didn't pay the immediate dividends in 2024, he continues to be one of their most important relievers. In the 11th, they get the run kind of the same way they were building the run in the 10th that they didn't get. Sacrifice fly by Brett Beatty, sacrifice fly by Marcus Semien. They don't take advantage of the error by Gus Varland, who tried to pick off A.J. Ewing and threw it away. And with a one-run lead going into the bottom of the 11th inning and the bottom half of the Nationals order coming up, my confidence level had now shifted towards, we may not win it here, but at least we can take it to the 12th. That's how I felt going in to the bottom of the 11th inning. And you've got Brett Beatty in this game at first base because, rightfully so, Mendy pinch ran for Vientos an inning earlier with Vidal Brujan. Made complete sense. Like, if Vientos is your base runner to start, and that was the case in the 11th inning, put some speed out there. And so going to Vidal Brujan, who you basically forget is on the team, is a no-brainer. But now it shifts everybody defensively. You have Brujan at shortstop, and I haven't seen enough of him to know if you should trust him or not. Bo Bichette back to third base, which he hasn't played a lot recently, and Brett Beatty to play first base. And maybe the most underrated, or I guess less identified big moment of the game, was some of the defensive plays that Brett Beatty made in extra innings after that move is made. Let's start off with the fact that on the very first pitch to Daylen Lyle, he hits a little cue shot back to Brazoban, who makes an off-balance throw. It's not a great throw, and Beatty calmly, the right footwork, scoops it out, avoids disaster. That's number one for Brett Beatty. Number two, after Joey Weimer gets the infield hit, which was no man's land, once he chopped that baseball with a runner on third base less than two outs, Bo Bichette was better off not trying to barehand it, but just trying to field it and throw Weimer out at first base. That was his best option. Instead, Bo's trying to barehand. They had no shot to throw out the tying run. So the Nats even it up, which is that one area of I kind of expected it. And then Brett Beatty makes one of the gutsiest, and again by an inch. We talk about the Mets and how different this game could have been, based on an inch to the left or the right. Brett Baty on a ground ball to first base decides to go to second, which I was surprised about as soon as he made the throw. And the throw came within, I'd say, a half an inch of hitting the base runner, Joey Weimer, who's a big man. And if he hits Joey Weimer, it's 2-1, one out. And who knows how this game ends? It probably ends right then and there, maybe a batter later. But the confidence of Baty at first base, I'm impressed by it. Granted, he's not playing a lot of first base, and he may not play a lot of first base for a while until at least Lindor is back. But he has shown like a level of confidence. Like the miscues that Baty has made at first base hasn't been about first base. It's really just booting ground balls, which he could make the same mistake at third. So gutty play by Baty. Great play by Baty. And then Vivas rips a double in which off the bat, I thought it had a chance to split the outfielders, go to the wall, and then this game is over. And it gave Brazoban one other opportunity to get through it, and he gets Drew Millis to ground out. So again, on death's doorstep, Waskar Brazoban makes the big pitches he needs to. And then obviously the explosion in the 12th inning that we went through, the sacrifice bunt by Hayden Senger, the infield hit by Carson Benj, the Bo Bichette base hit, the bunt by Vidal Bruhan, the two-run single by Brett Baty, the RBI single by Marcus Semien, and that forces the Nationals to tap out. Let's go back earlier in this game, though, to when Christian Scott had a dominant performance go bad. Because it feels like it was a year ago, but Christian Scott started this game and retired the first five batters he faced, and he struck out C.J. Abrams and Daylan Lyle back-to-back to start the second inning. And it felt as if Christian Scott may put together like a dominant performance. We may be seeing a great one from Christian Scott. And he gets ahead of Jacob Young and he drills him. And it really feels like that drilling of Jacob Young, a guy he knows, it affected him. Because Christian Scott was a completely different pitcher after he drilled Jacob Young, who had to leave the game. And hopefully he's okay. I say that just to be a classy guy because Jacob Young stuck it up our ass last year with those incredible defensive plays that he made. But it felt as if Scott was really bothered by it. He gets ahead of Jose Tena, the next hitter, gives up an RBI double, walks Vivas, gives up a base hit to Millis, has a shaky third inning, had a decent fourth inning, but at that point, his pitch count was so high, I got why Mendy pulled him at 81 pitches in four innings. But what could have been a dominant start seemed like it got affected by maybe the emotion of him hitting his friend. So what do you make of Christian Scott's start? Not much. He continues to show the potential. He continues to show the stuff. He continues to give you like these flashes of what he could be, but he hasn't put it together. And when you only go four innings, you're asking your bullpen to do an awful lot. And Austin Warren did a great job. I feel good about Austin Warren. Austin Warren has graduated from guy on the Syracuse shuttle to guy firmly entrenched in this bullpen. That's how good he's pitched, how well he's pitched, and he did it again. A clean fifth, gets around the leadoff walk in the sixth. The disaster was Brooks Raley, which is so rare. You know, Brooks Raley is usually so good, so solid, so dependable, that when you see him struggle the way he struggled, it's just something you don't expect. A double, back-to-back walks. And that's where this lead became dicey. Because they're down 2-1, they're down 3-1, they come back 3-2, Juan Soto gets the big two-run single to give him the lead. And now you're wondering, does the bullpen have enough juice to get through this entire game, to get through five innings after you only got four from Christian Scott? You get two from Austin Warren, you're counting the outs, at least I am, thinking, okay, they need nine outs, and they're not getting any from Devin Williams, who's not going to be available in this game. And this was just a stinker from Brooks Raley. I give him a little bit of credit because after he put the first three guys on base, he was able to get the two outs of C.J. Abrams and Daylan Lyle, and he got bailed out by Tobias Myers, one of the many big outs with guys on base when he struck out Jose Tena. And then Tobias Myers lost it out of nowhere because he gets out of that mess of the seventh. He gets the first two outs in the eighth so quickly that I'm even giving the thought of, do you let Myers finish the game if he gets the third out quickly? Like, why screw around and go to Luke Weaver? If Tobias Myers is really looking that good, you may as well keep him in the game. And out of nowhere, he's ahead of James Wood again. Being ahead of guys and giving up base hits. I think it was a fastball right down the middle, if memory serves correct. And James Wood pounds a base hit to right field, and then he gives up the double to Curtis Meade, which again seemingly came out of nowhere. So from Myers potentially finishing this game out to Myers promptly giving up the lead. And it was air out of balloon. A two-run lead disappears. You're now in these late extra or late game, potentially at extra innings against the Washington Nationals, and you're doing it with a bullpen that you're pretty short on. You're not completely short, but you know off the top you don't have Devin Williams. You know that you don't have Sean Manaea, and who knows about the new kid that they called up? Durante. I'm not that familiar with him, to be honest with you. I think I looked up how to pronounce it earlier. I think it was Durant. It's D-U-A-R-A-T-E, Durat, Durate. I looked it up this morning and I completely forgot about it, but he didn't get in the game. And the only reason he's up here is because he had an opt-out and the Mets needed to call him up if they wanted him to at least remain here. It's pronounced Duarte. That's what it is. Daniel Duarte, who is from Mexico, and he's 29 years old, hasn't pitched in the major leagues since 2024 when he made two appearances for the Minnesota Twins. And in the minor leagues, let's see how he was doing this year. I think he was actually pitching well. At Syracuse, a 2.60 ERA, 17 and a third innings, 13 hits, 14 strikeouts, 9 walks. So you could have gone to Durate. But you really didn't have that many great options. So a lot of big pitches needed to be made in this game to the point where I'm counting it up on my scorecard. The Nationals left 19 guys on base. An absurd number. 19 guys on base. They left nobody on in the first inning because Christian Scott pitched a 1-2-3 inning. After that, 2-2-1-0-1-3-1-2-3-2-2 to end the game. So it's a testament to really the incredible pitching the Mets had in this game. The incredible ability to hold on. It wasn't easy. They walked a ton of guys. In fact, let me count that up. 4, 6, 7, 9 walks and 2 hit batsmen. So essentially 11 free passes by Met pitching in this game. You said it to me, Hoff, before we started. It wasn't pretty. They're not playing great. But hell, they won the game. And lately, they've been winning games despite it being not the prettiest thing in the world, despite not playing great baseball. And that continued here. Let me read some of your emails. I'm sure the Rico email was very entertaining throughout this. Let's see what we got. Christopher writes, wonderful win tonight. Team continues to have fight, but I'm really starting to hate ABS. On average, there were 10 missed calls a game. Most likely those 10 pitches are split between the two teams. Now at the challenge system, one team seems to benefit more than the other. If it's just 10 pitches, can't we just automate it? The only benefit has been umpires have seemed to call an overall better game. I struggle with blaming the players for using challenges and letting umpires off the hook. I was thinking about ABS tonight as well, because once Torrens lost his two challenges, they were both on him. It felt like there were so many pitches that I was looking at saying, can you challenge that? Can you challenge that? Can you challenge that? And while I don't hate the challenge system, and I don't dislike it as much as I thought I would, I do kind of agree, like, you may as well just get everything right. You may as well, like, just have everything correct. Dan writes, our good friend Dan, big 2 days of first baseman run prevention. He's right. The double play in the 10th inning against Austin Wells, in which Vientos made the perfect throw, and Brett Beatty making that throw by an inch. Joe in California writes, it sucks when you worry about a 10-run lead with Craig Kimbrell on the mound. Sheesh. I didn't have that worry. Believe it or not, I felt comfortable with a 10-run lead in Craig Kimbrell on the mound. Daniel writes, Ev, love the podcast. I'll keep this short and sweet. I didn't do the math, but are the Mets the best team in baseball minus the 12-game losing streak? All right, let's do some math on this. So the Mets are now 21-26. If you take out the 12-game losing streak, which you know you can't do, their record is 21-14. Is that the way we're going to look at this? We're going to say, hey, just take the losing streak out. They've got one of the best records in baseball. That's very, very creative. Good job. John writes, Evan, I freaking asked Siri the position player pitching rule in the middle of that umpire delayed debacle, and she had it right. As your old partner frequently says, what a disgrace. It was a disgrace. How do the umpires not know the rules? And it's not that complicated. It's not something that's that crazy. In extra innings, you can use a position player. I mean, what if you literally run out of pitchers? That's sometimes your best option, even though it's not really a good option when you've got a guy lobbing the ball in. And I also had this thought, because it did feel like the rest of the 12th inning was sort of not baseball. When you bring in Yorbit Vivas and he's lobbing the ball in, like he's not trying to pitch. He's literally just lobbing it in, and you're seeing the Mets go to town. Let me see all the hits here. A.J. Ewing, RBI single. Tyrone Taylor got robbed. Base hit by Hayden Senger. Two-run double, Carson Benge. Two-run double, Bo Bichette. And then finally, Juan Soto, of all people, popped up the first base. It didn't feel like real baseball. I am not complaining. It is not our problem. That's the Nationals' decision to tap out, and the Mets have every right to take advantage of it. All the stats count the same. But as I'm watching that, I'm thinking, I can totally see Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball eventually, because of this, adding a mercy rule. And I never thought that would be the case, but I also never thought they would put a guy on second base in extra innings. So I certainly can't be surprised by what rule they may eventually add. A mercy rule would not surprise me. Not surprise me in the least bit, especially in a situation like this. Now, as we look towards game two of the series, pressure's on Nolan McClain. Like, they now need Nolan McClain to eat innings, because you look at the guys that were used. I don't know how many guys are going to be available on Tuesday. Austin Warren won't be available. Luke Weaver may be available. Waskar Brazeman certainly won't be available. Tobias Myers will likely not be available. So Sean Manaea is still probably not available. So I look at who's going to be available in Tuesday's game. You're looking at Duretti. You're looking at Devin. You're looking at, I mean, that's really it. It's not, there's not many guys unless they want to find a way to make another roster move. So Tuesday's game against the Nationals, and it is not easy considering the Nationals have the best offense in the National League statistically. They need innings from Nolan McClain. It is imperative. And, you know, we talked about that the other day, how with Freddy Peralta basically being a 5.5 inning guy, with Clay Holmes being out, with Christian Scott only going 4 at times, there aren't many guys in this rotation that can give you innings and take you deep into a game. And considering the state of the bullpen and considering the Mets don't have an off day until next Thursday, Nolan McClain, I mean, I'd love if it's 8 scoreless, but you have to go 7 innings. Like, Tuesday's game is almost a must 7-inning performance by Nolan McClain. I can promise you that doing a Rico after game two will be very difficult, because I'll be at the Knicks game on Tuesday night. But make sure you subscribe to the Rico, because whenever we do add a surprise instant reaction Rico Bronya, if you have subscribed, you're good to go. Same thing with making sure that you've subscribed to the WFAN YouTube page. Hoff, any final thoughts before we go? I think Hoff fell asleep, but that's okay. As long as we got the Rico up, it's all good. Thank you very much for listening to episode 695 of Rico Bronya. He did fall asleep. All right. See you later.